The real baseball. You can almost taste. We are so close to real baseball, and Anthony and I both watched fake baseball last week, and it is not nearly as cool as real baseball. We're so close to real baseball.
Smell the baseball.
Hey, Anthony.
Hey, what's up there, guy?
Hey, buddy boy. How's
things? We've got a really big show.
Today we have a really big show.
But like, but seriously though, we have a really, really big show.
We do have a really big show today. Welcome into episode number 37 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I am Tyler Mon. He is Anthony Masterson. We were brought in today by our good pal Larry Good. Sent us in some music that he has a hand in. That one was called Cheese Party. And I feel like it brought us in on a very, like, it's like a very, like, Mad Men scene change kind of note. I really dig it. It's got, like, a good, got, like, a real good vibe to it today. I'm really feeling
got,
it.
Got, like, a real good vibe.
Really feeling
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, we're feeling good. We're ready to go. We are ready. We are ready to rock.
Good.
Yeah. So episode number 37, we have a few to choose from here in terms of the Immemorial Editions. Nick Massett from last year, going to ex-nay that one. Adam Ottavino in his first year in 2012.
Adam.
Greg Reynolds, the best in 2011.
Man.
Ryan Spire in 2009. Josh Fogg, 06 to 07. That's a very high candidate right now.
Yeah, it is.
The late Joe Kennedy, of course, 2004, 2005. Darren Oliver, 2003. Kane Davis, 2001. Not a real person, probably.
K-A-N-E.
Stan Belinda, 2000. John Burke, 96 and 97. Wow. And one of my personal favorites from the 93 team, Jay Gaynor.
G-A-I-N-E-R.
Yes.
Not G-A-Y-N-O-R.
And if I remember correctly, Jay Gaynor, I think, hit a home run in his first at bat or his first game in 93. If my computer wasn't too slow right now, I would try and look it up.
I will look it up on the game log.
But my vote.
And you are correct. He went 1-for-5 in his very first game with a solo homer. He had a 200 average that day. Never cracked 200 again.
Hey, that's a career,
but hey,
man.
That's pretty cool. Homer in your first game. Maybe your first AB.
That's pretty okay. And my vote today, Josh Fogg.
Yeah.
The Dragon Slayer.
I mean,
2007, Josh Fogg, he was the man.
He was
the guy.
He was. He was terrible in the wild card tiebreaker.
He started all those big games.
But he was. I got to do it.
Hey, but so was Jake Peavy.
I got to do it. I have to go Greg Reynolds here. I have to. Especially because Greg Reynolds actually initially wore the number 54 back in 2008 when he first came.
Yeah, but no, though. haven't we already done Greg Reynolds once?
No, because his only other number in a Rockies uniform was 54. I got to go Greg Reynolds. I'm sorry. I have to. He was the second overall pick in the 06 draft. Like, we're not going to go through the whole Greg Reynolds thing, but he was taking one pick ahead of Evan Longoria, five picks ahead of Clayton Kershaw, eight picks ahead of Tim Lincecum, nine picks ahead of Max Scherzer. You know who else was taking?
I don't know, man.
I think you and I did this actually on a very early episode, but Billy Rowell.
Yeah.
Remember Billy Rowell?
Oh, yeah, Billy Rowell.
Frederick Key.
Former Frederick Key, great. Taken by the Orioles, number 9, right? Or number 8?
Yeah, he was terrible.
Yeah, just really, really bad. Dude, I feel like if we go with Greg Reynolds here, that's going to cast a pall over what could be the biggest episode of the PDP ever.
Big stuff!
Ever, ever, ever.
It is a big one today. Oh. Tell us what we have coming up on the show today, Anthony.
Well, which one are we going to choose here? We got to find that out first.
I don't know. What do you want to I think we had a we had like a production meeting like 5 minutes ago. What did we decide?
We're gonna
BS for the first 10 minutes, and then coming up 10 minutes from now, Jonah Carey of
JonahCarey.com
joins us. He of Up, Up and Away, the book that you have read about the Montreal Les Expos, also the author of The Extra 2%, about the Tampa Bay Rays. Subtitle of that book, How Wall Street Strategies Took a Major League Baseball Team from Worst to First. Also, editor and co-author of Baseball Between the Numbers and a contributor in 2007 to The Cheater's Guide to Baseball. Also co-authored a book about the Red Sox. He's been in Baseball Prospectus. You've seen him all over the place. You see him on Twitter. You see him on ESPN, Grantland.com. Jonah Carey. He's coming up in about 10 minutes.
He is my favorite follow on Twitter. One of the coolest dudes you're going to find. And he is here.
On the PDP.
Tonight, on the PDP. What is going on? What is going on?
Get with it.
What else are we going to hear about tonight, Tyler?
Get with the program. We're also going to hear from Colorado Rockies pitching prospect Tyler Anderson. Tyler will join the show coming up a little bit after Jonah. I got a chance to talk to him at Colorado Rockies spring training. In addition to Tyler Anderson, who, by the way, enters the 15 season as a pretty highly ranked prospect in your Colorado Rockies organization as per MLB.com. He's number 17 on the MLB.com prospect rankings. So we'll hear from Tyler. Of course, hasn't been throwing 100%. He's had the stress fracture in his elbow. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we go further into the show. And then we'll also hear from Rockies manager of player development, Chris Forbes, who, if you don't know anything about Chris Forbes, and I met him and talked to him a few times and did not know his story, but his story is unbelievable. On New Year's Eve 1999 into 2000, he was diagnosed with cancer, given a very short time to live, and it has been 15 years, and he is awesome. He beat it. It's been in remission. He is a really, really fascinating guy, very friendly guy to talk to. So Chris Forbes, we'll hear from him kind of on just what the player development staff is doing right now at this stage in spring training. So we'll hear from Chris as well. But first things first, got to get into some John Gray talk, I think.
Just a little bit.
The
yeah,
talk
a little
of the
bit
town.
More. Yeah, John Gray is the Colorado Rockies version of Chris Bryant. Do you call him up? Do you call him up right away? Do you leave him down for 10 days? Do the Rockies want to make a Mark Kisla-style move and put him there on the home opener and lose a year of his eligibility? There's a lot of things to be talked about here. And listen, to a certain extent, I get both sides. I think one side has more of a say in things, but I think both sides have points. Now, we are both, I believe, of the ilk that John Gray should be kept down for at least the requisite 12 days in order to keep his service time down and keep the Rockies have another year of control over John Gray. Are we correct there?
Yes.
Yes. I think our good pal Matthew Gross on Twitter went through it and said, you know, he's going to be gone for 12 days is 10 games for the Rockies to begin the year. That means John Gray would ostensibly miss one start.
Yes.
One start for another full year of team control. Now, I don't really see why you wouldn't do that. It's not a fault of John Gray for being probably the best pitcher the Rockies are going to have, at least the best starter the Rockies are going to have coming out of spring training. That's not the issue at all. The issue is the rules set in place right now by Major League Baseball and the Players Association and the CBA. It is not to the Rockies' benefit to bring up a guy, a big-time prospect like John Gray, and lose a full year of team control when all you have to do is make him miss basically a start, and that's it. Big market teams can afford to do it because they know if they're going to pay this kind of prospect, they're going to pay him anyway. He's going to get his money. It's not going to be a problem. But a smaller market team like the Rockies, they need to play it safe, and they need to do what's right in the strict business sense. And I hate saying that, but it's true. It's 10 days. It's 10 games. It's one start. That's it. For a whole other year team control, I think the decision's pretty easy.
Bingo.
Personally.
Bingo. There are so many things that go into this whole situation, but to me, it's a non-issue because of the fact that with John Gray, you're only going to miss one start. And I understand that, you know, Trollzilla over there thinks that you throw him out for the home opener because you got to make a splash.
It'll galvanize the fan base.
Whatever other nonsense that was.
Coors Field's already sold out for opening day.
They're playing the Cubs. It's going to be. Yeah. It's been sold out since the moment that game was announced. You need to galvanize the fan base. Like, it's nonsensical. And we've talked so much on this podcast. The media in this town approaches everything from the standpoint of what would the Broncos do? What would work in the NFL here? That's not how it works in baseball. I was on ESPN Denver today with Nate Kreckman, and we talked a lot about this. And Nate's sort of the mindset, too, that especially now with, you know, 4/5 of the starting rotation, basically question marks, you need John Gray.
Yeah, if not more.
Right, yeah. You need John Gray from moment one. And Nate and I talked about it a lot, and I said, I understand that line of thinking, but you're only going to miss one, maybe, if they screw it up, two outings with him.
Yes.
Is that going to make that big of a difference? This is not Chris Bryant, where he's going to be in the lineup every single day.
Yeah.
With a starting pitcher, he's out once every 5 days. This is a no-brainer to keep him in the minor leagues. And the other argument was, well, pitchers don't last long at Coors Field. No pitcher in. And first it was something that Kisla said, and Nate kind of dovetailed off of it today and said, if you look back at the most successful pitchers in Rockies history, they, for the most part, last about 4 years, and then they flame out. That's true.
That's true with a lot of pitchers.
That's a very astute observation. It's a very good point. But the Rockies have never had a pitcher of this talent level and this caliber that they've drafted and developed and brought to the big leagues. Maybe Ubaldo, maybe.
He was not as polished as John Gray was, even by a little bit.
Not at all. So that's the other thing to me. You're bringing up a guy who you have to play this card from the hand of best case scenario. You have to look ahead and say, if John Gray turns into what Jason Park says he's going to turn into, if he turns into what Baseball America says he's going to turn into, if he turns into all of the good things that we expect from John Gray, then you want to have the option of keeping that kid around in 2021. And everybody thinks, oh, he's going to be so old and broken down, Coors Field, whatever. He's going to be in his late 20s.
Yeah.
So there's no, this is not even a debate. This is only because in, you know, whatever room they come up with the column ideas, he threw a dart and came up on big splash on opening day, and all of a sudden it threw it out into the conversation vernacular for Rockies fans and baseball fans in this town. This is a non-issue. John Gray does not start this season in the big league rotation. And if he does, I think somebody got a little panicked.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If they do make that decision at the end of spring training in a week from now, if they say John Gray will start the season with the ball club, yeah, I think it's definitely a panic move, and I would very much question it unless there is some kind of whatever extension like signed by John Gray, a la John Singleton, a la Evan Longoria. Right. Right. Where they bring up those guys, sign them to what is a very team-friendly contract at the end of it. It sets the kid for life right off the bat, whatever it is. It ends up being like, you know, 4 years, $20 million or whatever it is. Something that if it all goes well for that player, it's going to be a very, very team-friendly contract. And then they bring them up right away, and then don't have to worry about service time anymore because the kid is signed to a big-time deal a big league deal.
This is the issue. This is how it goes, because it's a very complicated situation. But basically, we probably should have explained this at the beginning of this conversation. You need six full years of major league service in order to qualify for free agency. Six full seasons of major league service. In order to qualify for a full season of major league service, you need to be at the major league level on the major league roster for 172 days of what's generally about 183-day season. So if you keep a guy in the minor leagues until there's 171 days left and then promote him, that does not count toward those six seasons that are ticking off to when he can be a free agent. So right. If you can hold on to him for just that, you know, 6/7 of the season or whatever it is, then you get that extra year on the tail end of that six-year period. You'll have him actually under team control for basically 7 years, and he won't be a free agent until after that sixth full season is elapsed. So it is a little bit complicated, and it, you know, again, it's a very different question when it comes to Chris Bryant or when it came to Singleton last year, Gregory Polanco a couple of years ago. It's a very different question, but you can see the Cubs already setting the table for this. Now they're playing Chris Bryant in the outfield. And when it comes to the end of spring training, they're going to say, Chris needs more work in the outfield. We're going to send him to Iowa. And that's how it's going to go. Whether it's right or wrong, who knows? But that's the way the collective bargaining agreement has been stacked. Major leaguers have sold minor leaguers down the road. I think a lot of people have said, down the road. Sold them down the road. I'll just make up phrases.
Up and down the river
streams with a paddle, and that's why it happens. So you know, it's a non-issue, but it's been turned into an issue. But Jonah Carey is coming up next on episode number 37 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Jonah's coming up right now. Super excited for our first legitimate guest is not named Benjamin Hockman on the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Jonah Carey from Grantland.com joins us. Jonah, welcome. How are you?
I just went bowling with Benjamin Hockman last night. Neither he nor I are legitimate. I want you to know that.
I always get the emails of where you guys are going, and I always end up having to work, and I'm so bummed that I can't hang out on, like, bowl. Where was bowling night? Where'd you go? Did you go, like, 300 games? Where? How good was everybody?
No, none of us were really bowling. I mean, I had a couple of strikes or whatever. It was fun. I went to Ilitch Lanes.
Okay.
And for people who don't know, which is everybody listening to this podcast, you know this. I moved here 3 years ago. Benjamin and I became fast friends. And you know what? I'm going to tell the long version of this story, because why not?
Do it. It's a podcast.
Do it. We've got time.
Yeah. So it's a fun story, and has a lot of color to it. Let's put it that way.
Good.
One night, it's October 2012. I've been there a few months. I've started to meet some of Ben's friends. He was like my first friend in town. We go. Actually, one of them was Nick Groke, who's the beat writer for the Rockies. In fact, he's a real life friend before he became beat writer for the Rockies. Me, Groke, Hockman, and this other guy, very nice dude named Michael. We go to the Thin Man. Thin Man is a great bar. If you've never been there, it's not far from City Park. Chill, you know, like a normal, relaxed place, and have infused vodkas and pretty good beer, and it's great, nice place. So we're sitting down to Wednesday. We're just having a beer and chatting. It's like 8:30, 9 o'clock. And at some point, I don't remember who it was, definitely not me, but somebody says, let's have a shot of Patron. And I said, no, because that's crazy. And it's Wednesday, and no. And someone persisted, and then lo and behold, shots of Patron appeared. One shot of Patron each appeared in front of us. It was at least twice the size of a normal shot. It was more or less two shots of Patron and one shot. Big shot. I reluctantly get it down, whatever. All of us drink it. Okay, this is getting a little out of hand. Suddenly, this woman comes over. I can only describe her as a cougar. That would be the proper term. Looks at, I'm going to guess, Ben. I don't know. One of them, not me. And says, now you're all doing another round of Patron. Shots appear. By the way, we were not talking to this person. She was on the other side of the bar. And she didn't even drink with us. She just came to buy us drinks and disappeared.
What?
That's exactly what happened. I'm not. Drinking anyway. That's exactly what happened.
So now, she just showed up, buys the shot, and then walks away.
Four shots. Patron. Patron's nice, good stuff, too. That probably cost a couple bucks. Yep. Yep. So we drank that, and then the night kind of devolved, as you can imagine. And we stayed at Thin Man until, I think we might have gone to another bar. I honestly can't even remember. And we ended up at Tom's Diner downtown. By the way, I was living in Park Hill. So this was, Thin Man was close. I couldn't quite walk, but it was close. Somehow we went 5 miles in the other direction.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then you went further away. You drank more and went further away from home.
I don't know how that happened. We go to Larimer Square. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday, by the way. Fortunately, my wife is very awesome and whatever. And, and I'm trustworthy other than, I guess, drinking Patron from strangers. And we're eating duck wings at Tom's Art Urban Diner at 3 in the morning. And it's, you know, it's Wednesday. It's gone on to Thursday morning at this point. And at some point, we're just like, dude, Wednesday is the new Saturday. Wait a minute.
So that's where it started.
That's where it started. And then we're like, wait a minute. Wednesday is new Saturday, W-I-N-S, wins. This thing is going to be called Wins, and we are now going to go on a Wednesday night instead of going out on weekends, because that's what posers and frat boys do. Apologies if you guys are frat boys, by the way.
That's what Lodo's for. Yeah, that's fine.
Right, exactly. Like, that's what View House is for. No, we're going to go to, like, crappy dive bars on Wednesday and have $2 beers and have fun on Wednesdays. And so that has become a tradition. And so we went to Ilitch Lanes yesterday on purpose on a Wednesday. They have, by the way, $1 beers and $1 Jello shots on Wednesday night.
Oh, wow. That's solid.
And $1 rounds of bowling and $1 corn dogs if you hypothetically wanted to go.
That is fantastic.
Yes. So
literally want to go. Not hypothetically. I literally want to do that.
Bowling is fun. I haven't bowled in 10 years, and I was like, why don't I do this more often? It was great.
That's my thought every time I go bowling. It's like, why is this not a thing that I do more? It's so much fun.
It's totally fun, and Wednesday is the new Saturday. And,
wins everywhere.
It's wins, and my advice to people listening to this is, you've got your own routine, and you're an accountant or a lawyer, whatever it is you do, and then maybe you'll tie one on happy hour on a Friday, or maybe go on a Saturday. No. Change the routine, accept the fact that your Thursday is going to be garbage, and go out on Wednesdays because it is the new Saturday.
You know, and you feel super cool on Thursday having done something on Wednesday. You know what I mean? Like, you see people on Thursday and you're like, should have seen my night last night. You feel so much cooler than everybody else who, like, went home and, like, watched reruns of The Office.
Yeah. I fell asleep at 10:03 p.m. No, dude. We had shots of Patron bought from us from some mystery woman, and we still don't know.
And disappeared.
Game over. Say another word. Right there.
It was amazing.
Jonah Gary of Grantland.com is our guest for episode number 37. And Jonah, I wanted to dive into this. You wrote a fascinating piece last week, actually a couple of weeks ago now, for Grantland about the Tommy John epidemic. Because just since the start of 2015, I want you guys to bear with me on all of the pitchers who have had Tommy John surgery. This is just through yesterday. Zach Wheeler, this does not include Brady Aiken, last year's first overall pick, who announced today that he had Tommy John surgery yesterday. But these are all the guys. Zach Wheeler, Will Remillard, Joel Hanrahan, Josh Edgen, Yu Darvish, Tim Collins, Brandon Compton, Shea Simmons, Onas Farfan, Derek Velasquez. All those guys, just since January 14th, have had Tommy John surgery. So it's happening a lot. And Jonah talked to medical professionals, people who understand why this sort of thing might be happening. And give us an idea of some of the schools of thought of what is going on.
Yeah, first of all, that is way down from last year, actually.
Yeah, which is shocking.
Last year was the all-time high, and really, I mean, this conversation had been going on, but last year was just off the charts.
Last year was more surgery, more Tommy Johns last year than in all of the 1990s. Is that right?
That is exactly. I have that in my article. Isn't that an amazing and
unbelievable?
It's in the lead of the story. Yeah, it's totally terrifying. And you know, there's a lot of schools of thought. So let's start with the more benign reasons, which is detection is much better. Our medical imaging technology has improved leaps and bounds just in the last few years, to the point where now you can see these little tears. And you could diagnose better. You could say, this thing is happening. You might not need Tommy John surgery now, but it looks like you might need it at some point. Okay, fine. Then there's more acceptance. And in fact, there's so much acceptance. This is true. When I talked to this guy, Dr. Glenn Fleissig, who is a biomechanics expert who works with Dr. James Andrews in Alabama, and he said that in his experience doing these studies, what would happen is high school kids and their parents would come up to doctors and say, I want Tommy John surgery.
Right.
And the doctor would say, there's something wrong with you.
Preemptively.
They, not even preemptive, they'd say, I think it can add 5 miles to my fastball. That is not how it works at all.
That's not how it works.
Your arm is busted and you need to fix it. It's like if you break your leg. You don't like go in for tibia surgery for no reason. This is what they believe. So there's more acceptance on their behalf too. But the biggest thing that Fleissig talks about, those two reasons exist, but the biggest thing he talks about is this generation that's coming up right now is the first generation that's really only played one sport. That if you go back to, I'm 40, so you know my generation, the pitchers who would be my age were obviously mostly retired, or pretty much all retired, except for Bartolo Colon, I guess. And Bartolo, I can't imagine Bartolo Colon played any sports as a kid. But they played football and basketball, or maybe you know if you're Tom Glavin, you played hockey or whatever. You just found something else to do, and now kids are playing baseball all year round, and specifically if you're a pitcher and you pitch all year round at 12 or 14 or 16 or 18, that's bad. That's not good for you because your body is not ready to handle that kind of workload, and you're just throwing pitches and going to tournaments and playing in this and doing that, and there is no incentive for your little league coach or your high school coach or whatever to hold back. You know, their whole thing, their whole existence revolves around this. They don't have a major league front office to answer to where if your guy goes in for Tommy John surgery, you lost $100 million. That's not the case there. So that was his theory. And in fact, it was almost an aside. We had this long, we talked for over an hour, and I knew Dr. Fleissig for years. I interviewed him for Baseball Prospectus, literally like in 03 or something. But at the end of this very long conversation, I just, as an aside, said, wait a minute, maybe the new market inefficiency is we should go draft kids from Winnipeg or Vermont or whatever. And he said, yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea because
wow,
you pitch 12 months a year in Winnipeg or Vermont. And I said, oh, okay. So, you know, this is a big puzzle and we're still trying to solve this thing. But maybe the next generation, we're going to shy away a little bit from the kid from Texas or Florida or California. Who knows? I feel like there will have to be changes. And they're going to have to come at the youth level, which is very, very difficult to do. But major league teams, if they can't preemptively do something, if they can't proactively do something, because presumably these kids are damaged goods by the time they get drafted, they might give more thought to a kid who has a great fastball but plays against weak competition and happens to be from Connecticut.
And you mentioned this a little bit, but you saw that all these parents are asking for Tommy John surgery for their kids when they're in high school or whatever because they want to make their kids better. But and I think the problem with it is that Tommy John surgery, we've seen success stories with it. But you mentioned in your article that, you know, 20% of pitchers never make it back to their previous level of performance. And what would you say to a parent who came up and said, hey, should my son get Tommy John surgery preemptively? Because I can't even imagine what the response would be.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's something to cure an injury, and it was a revolutionary idea invented by Dr. Frank Jobe in 1974. And, you know, the theory was that Koufax, for instance, if he had Tommy John surgery, he might have pitched another 5, 6, 7 years. There were all kinds of pitchers who broke down and just they couldn't do anything because you could not repair the ligament. But the point is that you have to repair the ligament. That is the whole idea. And so the idea that you do it preemptively or whatever before you're even injured just doesn't make any sense at all. And so – yeah, I mean, you want education to occur. You want education to occur with youth coaches so that they're not, you know, just really applying the whip to these kids. And you want parents to understand. You want the kid, the pitchers themselves to understand. You want all that to kind of sink in. But like I said, for major league teams, it is an issue because you cannot get MRI. You can't put an MRI on these kids beforehand. That's not allowed. According to collective bargaining agreement, you have to wait until they're actually drafted. So you could draft somebody and then afterwards, whoopsie daisy, turns out that the guy is totally damaged goods and we're not going to see him for the next year and a half. I don't necessarily believe in encroaching on people's medical profiles. I think that there's some merit to the fact that it's in the collective bargaining agreement that you're not, you know, messing with kids before they're even drafted. But at the same time, it absolutely puts teams in a bind and it forces them to maybe think creatively.
And so, in your opinion, the main crux of how to maybe start preventing this on a national level, does it start with Little League?
Yeah, theoretically, you know, that's the idea. And that's what Dr. Fleissig has been doing for a while. He put together this educational website, which he puts out there and makes it clear to people, you can check this out. You can look at what's going on and get a feel for it. And he wants coaches, you know, he wants Little League officials and parents and so forth to look at all that stuff. And that's the hope. But it's a drop in the bucket. And, you know, oftentimes it really does kind of, ultimately the coaches call the shots at that level. And so you can educate this coach or that coach, but there's always going to be 100 more who really don't give a fig. And, you know, it's amazing to me that, like, we talk about high school coaches or college or whatever, and they're not incentivized to protect their investment. And granted, there's no incentive if you're a Little League coach too, but by the same token, it's freaking Little League. Is it really that big a deal in your life if you win, you know, unless you're literally winning the Little League World Series, which I guarantee you're not, a guy from Iowa. Just show some prudence. You know what I mean? These are kids. And it was interesting. Fleissig rebutted a bunch of things that I suggested. You know, there's this talk of, oh, kids can't throw curveballs or sliders, or this is, you know, deleterious to their arm. It's going to cause an injury. He said no. And he didn't even say this has been tested. It has nothing to do with any of this, with pitch selection. Ultimately, it just comes down to usage. If you are used too much, you're going to get injured, and people aren't doing anything about it.
That's fascinating, especially because that's what – I mean, I know at least when I was a kid, that's all I heard was you're only going to throw fastballs until you're of a certain age. And I feel like that's probably conventional wisdom for a lot of people. But he said that's not really the case. It's just the amount of mileage basically on an arm.
Yeah, that's all it is. And you know, maybe there could be a hidden benefit to not throwing curves or sliders. But, you know, if that's the case, it's not showing up in the data. It really is only about usage. That's it.
Jonah Carey from Grantland.com is our guest. By the way, Major League Baseball is sort of, I hate to make this comparison, but they've sort of launched almost like a heads-up football campaign, and this is instead geared toward pitcher arm injuries. It's called Pitch Smart. It's a partnership with USA Baseball, and I guess like heads-up football, who knows if it'll do anything, but you can check out some of their stuff. The very first thing on the website, MLB.com/PitchSmart, is a video with Dr. James Andrews where he talks a little bit about it. And so it's just fascinating the way that we've seen this explode. I mean, for that, in the lead paragraph in that story, for it to say that last year there were more Tommy Johns done than the entire 1990s blows your mind. But it's, you know, hopefully something that we'll see at least kind of start to come back down from the top of the curve, because it's been insane. But speaking of guys blowing out arms and injuries and stuff, since Jonah's on the podcast, this will probably be the last episode that we ever do.
Yeah,
based on the track record.
Yeah.
With Jonah Carey. But
it's been nice knowing you guys.
But we're super excited for that. And in fact, Jonah actually wrote the Colorado Rockies preview for Grantland.com just this past week. And so now, since then, you know, we've seen, obviously, Yoelis Chacin was released. Jorge De La Rosa is probably not going to be ready for the start of the regular season. David Hale won't be ready. So, Jonah, explain yourself then to everyone. Why do you do this to us?
Pitchers get injured. Rockets pitchers get injured. If anything, it's a lower base rate of those three guys getting into the last that we're used to seeing with Rockies pitchers. I feel like I've helped the health of them.
That's true. That is actually probably very true. Fair. Well, tell us about, because that's a lot of what your story focused on with the Rockies. They missed 1,089 total days on the disabled list. 26 separate trips to the DL, according to your story from last week, which is still way behind. The Texas Rangers lost over 2,000 player days.
That's absurd.
To the disabled list, which is nuts. But that has to change now, obviously, for this team to be competitive. And you would think the law of averages would suggest at some point Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez and these guys have to stay healthy, right?
Yeah, 2013, actually, the injuries were below average. They didn't have that many injuries, the Rockies, at all. But, you know, what's been happening is you often have significant players get injured, including, obviously, Tulo. And that's it. You know, you could have this many injury days or that many injury days. But when it's literally Tulo, Cargo, Arenado, and Kadire, and your whole pitching staff, you ain't winning anything. It's impossible. You cannot. You know, if Willian Rosario missed a bunch of games, oh, no, we're going to miss Willian Rosario's incredible receiving skills. It's okay. But, yeah, not the case. They obviously, they're key guys. You know, Dickerson stayed healthy. They had a couple guys stay healthy, but it was rough. And that's the hope. And it's hard to, you know, there's two things going on. I asked Walt White this. I asked all of them. And, of course, they're going to say, we don't use them as an excuse. We should have played better, blah, blah, blah. But it isn't. I mean, it's a real excuse. So we'll see. I do think the team has a lot of talent, at least on the position player side. You know, pitching is interesting. Talking to Breidich, this even came up when I interviewed. One of the first things that I did when I moved here was I had a whole long talk with Bill Guyvette back when he had that office inside the clubhouse. And he was an interesting guy. You know, it didn't work out for him, but he's definitely had some interesting things to say. And we talked all about this stuff and about health and what to do. And ultimately, whether it's Guyvette or Breidich or whatever, they all acknowledge that not since the days of Mike Hampton choosing Denver for the incredible public schools. And Denver does have great public schools. Now that I've moved here, I can attest. But I think probably it was $120 million was the reason he came.
Probably. Yeah.
Probably. Unless you royally overpay a pitcher, they might not come to Denver. That even if the Rockies get better, which can happen, it's just such a tough sledding for that to happen. And so the result is you have to develop your own guys. And ultimately, I think this is where the team is going to sink or swim long-term and short-term. And I think that's part of the reason that Breidich got hired, to be honest with you, that the Montfort's obviously very loyal and they tend to look from within. You know, O'Dowd lasted probably longer than – not probably, definitely longer than he should have. And Breidich came up through the system too. Breidich is also a smart guy and I think probably deserved a shot. And I think that's all fair, but he also just knows the system really well.
Right.
And so when we talk about Butler or Gray or anybody, he knows these guys and he has a feel for them and, you know, maybe a feel for what their clock would be. Maybe we should rush them. Maybe we shouldn't. What should we do? And we'll see, because that is where the team is going to, you know, make hay or not. That we've seen position players put up huge numbers and even defend better. I mean, defense was a problem for the Rockies in the past. Gee, with Tulo and Arenado, that's the best left side of an infield in all baseball by far. Yeah. So, and the outfield defense has gotten better too. They don't, you know, Kadire's gone for one thing. That's a very good. But yeah, you know, you put Dickerson and Cargo out there when they're healthy, they can go get it. And they'll have a better defensive right fielder, obviously, this year with Kadire gone. And they're doing some things well, but they still need to pitch. And even if you adjust for the park factors of Coors Field, you do the fancy math, there's still a lot of very good pitchers. And they have to figure that out. And it's got to come from within, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and we had this discussion at the beginning of the podcast. And there's a lot of talk right now about John Gray being somewhat of the Chris Bryant of the Colorado Rockies, where do you call him up from a spring training? Do you put him in the rotation, you know, from day one? Do you miss out on that extra year of service time? And you know, what is your thought on the subject, considering that Gray would miss probably one start as opposed to Chris Bryant missing 2 weeks of the season? I mean, what are your thoughts on the Rockies having this kind of pitching prospect that they've never really had before, a polished guy, a strikeout guy, a guy who can really head a rotation for years to come if possible? Do you keep him in the minor leagues for two more weeks, or do you bring him up from day one?
I feel like they've had Polish guys, but not polished guys. So yeah.
Yeah, well.
Thanks.
Mark Knutson, yeah.
Yes. No, I'm a big believer in the service time stuff, and even Bryant, who might hit six home runs in the first 2 weeks, I'd still leave him down because it's 2 weeks and you're getting a whole year. I just think that whether or not your franchise has a ton of money, the Cubs do, the Rockies don't. Rockies are, and by the way, I don't believe that this whole, the people locally talk about, oh, the Montforts are cheap or whatever. The Rockies every year have a middle of the pack payroll. Guess what? Denver is a middle of the pack size city.
Exactly.
Denver, I'm happily to live here until my kids go to college. My kids are five, so that's 13 more years. Great. Love it. But it's a mid-sized city. That's fine. And so because that's the case, it does matter that if Gray is really going to be that good, and we hope that he is, then of course hold him back for 2 weeks. Now, there's a numbers game in play where if literally De La Rosa and this guy and that guy can, okay, well, Matt Sick is starting and this guy, the math starts to get thin, but You work it out. Like you said, it's one start. Maybe you do it, you know, as a committee anyway, that it's the beginning of the season. Nobody's going more than five innings regardless. Okay, have Ottavino throw a couple and then bring in this guy and try it. Whatever. You know, that could work. It's not impossible that you can win that game. So I would do that. I think that ultimately the long term matters more than the short term. I also, even if you're an optimistic Rockies fan, they're not the favorites to win the division this year. Let's put it that way. If they make a positive, it would be a very big surprise. Not impossible, but it would be a surprise.
Jonah, we talked about this a little bit last year at one of the events that you and Ben and Nick were at, and kind of one of the things that I think a lot of people don't really want to wrap their minds around maybe is the fact that it's so easy to blame the Monforts. It's easy to blame the rooftop deck. It's easy to blame the fact that 14,000 people go to games at Salt River Field, and it's all about money, and now Dick Monfort's buying Macaroni Grill, and he couldn't keep Brett Anderson, whatever the hell it is. But the fact is the Rockies just have not had much talent. And don't you think that's sort of what it boils down to, especially the fact that now, and I talked about this with Nate Kreckman today, the guy that you're talking about in John Gray is probably the most talented prospect, at least from a pitching side, to ever come up through this system. So you're comparing apples to anything else in the world that is not apples, because John Gray, you've never had before. I mean, isn't that kind of what it comes down to with the Rockies, that they've just never really developed guys this good?
Yeah, before I answer that question, is it really the case that people don't like Salt River Field in the party deck? Are these people insane?
Hey, well, like, how awesome are they? Like, you know, the party deck is so easy to rip on, and then you go to the party deck and you're like, this is kind of awesome.
No, because people think that they spent that money on the party deck instead of spending it on the roster and the rotation, which is impossible because the money was there just for stadium upgrades.
Yeah, it came out of a city fund or whatever.
Yes.
It was available to them. Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I don't get that at all. And no. By the way, if I was single, I would literally just live at the party deck. Go there and have burgers and Stranahan's whiskey with or milkshakes with Stranahan's whiskey in it, and just you know, look at people all day.
And you're watching baseball, and you can see the mountains. It really is like the coolest place.
Amazing! And Coors Field, period, I think it's like the third oldest stadium in the league now.
It is, yeah, in the National League.
But it's beautiful, and Lotto's cool, and Falling Rock's great, and NBA Jam at 1UP is great. These are all great things. I love living in Denver. It's so fun. Everything is fun around the baseball stadium. No, these are not problems. These are assets. And the Monforts have every right to make a profit, and that's not a problem. And like I said, they have a mid-sized payroll, which is completely appropriate. But you're right. It's not that much talent. What I don't know, maybe the second or third most successful pitcher in the franchise's history is Aaron Cook.
Right,
yeah.
Am I wrong on that? I think I'm right. You guys are Rockies guys. You could tell me.
Yeah, in terms of war, it is, I think it's Ubaldo, Jorge De La Rosa, and Cook and Francis are like the top four.
Okay. Now, granted, a lot of it's because of guys don't stay long or attrition or whatever, but Cook had a lot of success. Is Cook wildly talented? Well, of course he is, and he found a formula that seemed to work for him and whatever. But that's not a great sign for a franchise. No denigrating Aaron Cook, but you got to do better than that. I guess Ubaldo would be the best homegrown pitcher in franchise history. He was legit,
he's amazing for 2 years.
Really, really, really good. But, you know, they kind of fell apart, and the Orioles are paying him too much money now and whatever. So they got to figure it out. I am sensitive to the Coors Field thing. I think we don't know for a fact that altitude causes more injuries, but I think it's possible. We do know for a fact that it causes more runs to be scored. We do know for a fact that the Rockies need to play really good defense to help the pitchers out. And that defense has not always been there. But yeah, it does come down to talent. And, you know, at that point, you could maybe put it on the Monforts, because the Monforts are the ones who hire the general manager, right? Aldao has been the general manager. And until he got canned, he was like with Bean and Cashman and Sabian. Those were the longest tenured guys. Okay, Bean is Bean. Sabian has 3 World Series. Cashman has 5 World Series, whatever.
Yeah.
One of these things doesn't belong here. You know what I mean? And,
exactly.
And I think that the progress of the franchise stalled because of lousy scouting and player development and so forth. And, you know, that ultimately fell under the auspices of Dan O'Dowd. We'll see what Breidich does. I can't tell you. I talked to him at length in spring training. He's certainly very smart, but I don't know if he'll turn it around or not. But it's better than relying on O'Dowd, because that was not working.
No. And so let's shift gears here. You're a Montreal native. You're the foremost authority on the Expos among national media members. Whenever the Expos come up in any conversation, in any kind of pop culture, you are always notified. I'm sure you have like a bat signal that goes up when you have the Expos logo in it and you see what's going on. But the team is responsible for the start of the career of one of the most beloved Rockies of all time, Larry Walker. Now, do you have any great Larry Walker memories of him as an Expo?
Yes. Forget about playing stuff. I'll just give you Larry Walker, the person.
Yes.
So when I was in high school, my idiot friends and I did not like art class. We used to goof around in art class. None of us were artistic. We thought it was a waste of time, whatever. And it was a waste of time. So what we used to do is we used to make signs that we would take with us to Olympic Stadium. The best sign we ever made, by far, was for Delino DeShields. Delino DeShields was a pretty good second baseman back in the day. The Expos ended up flipping him for Pedro Martinez, which was really but he was good. In those first few years, he was good. He stole a lot of bases, good on base guy, good second baseman, what have you. Very exciting player to watch. And even from the get-go, his first year, he was doing so well. He was doing so well, in fact, that we made a sign. This would have been right toward the end of the semester, so maybe like late May or early June or whatever. And the sign said in Delino DeShields' first year in the major leagues, Delino DeShields, the rookie of the year. That was what our sign said. No, just so creative. We're just geniuses. And so the sign that we made a sign for Walker too. We really grew to like Walker, and we would sit in the, we always sat in the right field bleachers regardless. Sometimes you could sneak down and get into the better seats, but sometimes you were confined to the bleachers. It cost a dollar or two, literally. And we just loved sitting there. It was great. So the sign that we made for Larry Walker wasn't funny per se, but it was like a play on words or whatever. So he's from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, which is a town outside of Vancouver. And there was an old country band called the Oak Ridge Boys. So we decided to name ourselves the Maple Ridge Boys. We would be the Maple Ridge Boys, and we would go sit in the bleachers with our stupid sign every game in right field. And Larry Walker was the right fielder. Larry Walker started noticing the sign because it was a big sign and there weren't that many people in the stadium or whatever. And so he would kind of tip his cap or whatever, and we'd cheer, and it was great. And then one time there was a pitching change. I don't remember what year, maybe like 92. And as a pitching change, and Walker, instead of going over and talking to Moises Alou and Marquise Grissom, collectively one of the best outfields of our lifetime.
Absolutely.
Fantastic three players. He decides that he's just going to kind of go post up near the warning track. And he actually sits down on the warning track and looks up and starts talking to the fans. He was such a chill. He was the ultimate chill bro, dude. He just – what you get from Walker. I don't think Walker was doing dissertations in his spare time. I think that he was a pretty straightforward kind of guy. No disrespect, but I think that's what he was like. Starts talking to the fans, starts talking to us specifically, and says – love the sign. I see you guys around, whatever. We're freaking out. We're like 16 years old. We're like, oh my God, Larry Walker's talking to us. It's crazy. So we're trying to make small talk with him, and we're like talking about his hometown. And that hometown was also where the hockey player Cam Neely came from, one of the best players of his generation. Of
course. Also made an appearance in the movie Dumb and Dumber.
He did make an appearance in Dumb and Dumber. There was also another guy. Unfortunately, he passed away in a crash, but his name was, I believe, Greg Moore. He was a terrific Formula One racer, really also one of the best of his generation. All these guys came from a little suburb
of
Vancouver called Maple Ridge, British Columbia. And so, and we're talking to him about Cam Neely and what's it? You're in Montreal, but Cam Neely's a Bruin. How do you feel about that? And it was the stupidest effing conversation ever, but we're just like making small talk with Larry Walker. And he goes on with this thing. The pitching changes like 2.5 minutes, and we're just talking to him about stupid nonsense, whatever. Where's your favorite place to go get poutine, whatever. And he chatted with us, and it was great. And so to me, that was Walker. And he was just this supernaturally talented guy. And in the book, which people should, whether or not you gave a fig about the Expos, there are so many fun stories, and there's so many about players and situations and stuff that it hasn't. I'm known as a stats guy. There's very little stats in this book. It's just stories. Imagine if I could tell you intimate details about Dante Bichette and I don't know, whatever, Rafael Betancourt,
Armando Reynoso.
Yeah.
And so that's what it is with the Expos book. And I do have a lot of stories about Walker, and I interviewed a lot of people about Walker. Walker himself was like a pretty good interview, but people talking about Walker was amazing. And he would tell these stories. Jesus, crazy stories. Like he would bet, by the time he was in his third or fourth year, it was a young team, so he was considered one of the veterans. He would always bet rookies who can hold their breath underwater long after the game. And so his trick was he would put his mouth on like where the air would come out, so that way he could kind of game the system. Which, by the way, is so freaking revolting, because if you think about how many people go through a hot tub after
That's probably really gross.
It's gnarly, man. He didn't care at all. He would collect the $50 and he would cackle. He just loved it. Like farting contests, like just the stupidest stuff. He was like a child, basically. And but everybody loved him. And what made him so amazing was, baseball was like an afterthought to him almost. He was a hockey player growing up, and reluctantly they shoved him into baseball at 16 or 17. He was just so supernaturally talented. And all these guys, Grissom and Alou and DeShields and these incredible, really good players are like, oh, Walker was more talented than all of us put together by a factor of 50. That he was the best base runner and the best arm and the best hitter. And he was just so, so, so good. And you know, the numbers that he put up when he came to the Rockies obviously were astronomical. This was in the height of the PED. Yeah. And I'm not claiming that Walker took PEDs, but it was a high offense era. And so everybody hit a lot.
Pre-Humidor, yeah.
Pre-Humidor Coors Field. So to hit 370 with 48 home runs or whatever, like, yes, it boggles the mind, but it's also everything in context, right? Sosa was hitting 66 home runs at the time. So it was a lot of crazy stuff going on. I think that it's almost like he's underrated as a result of that. That those numbers are so ridiculous that we can't quite put into context that he was a phenomenal player. And outside of Coors Field, and especially from 97 to 99, I think he had like a 975 OPS road during those years.
Yeah,
on the road.
Yeah, everywhere. It was incredible. It was the fact that he couldn't stay on the field long enough was his biggest issue going forward.
Right. And I think that he's not getting a lot of Hall of Fame support. I actually would vote for him. I think that the numbers are there, even if you strip out the effects of Coors Field. But the bottom line is, if he didn't miss all those games, then he would like almost certainly be a Hall of Famer, because he was really, really good and such an interesting guy. And again, such a fun-loving guy. Like, he really was a prankster and a silly guy and definitely did not take himself too seriously. And even when I interviewed him for the book, which at that point he's in his mid-40s or whatever – He's just a chill guy and he's a lot of fun. You know, I think that it's cool to me. Obviously, it would have been great if he was an Expo his whole career from my standpoint, but I like the fact that he was really embraced by this team, that he didn't become a Yankee or Red Sox or whatever. He went over to Colorado and the team didn't really have a super duper star at that point. He became that guy. I think that's awesome that you guys and us guys get to share somebody like that. He's a good emissary. He's a good representative for the two friends.
Absolutely.
Larry Walker, when the Rockies acquired him, I still have this like cheesy VHS tape that was like a highlight video of the 95 season when they moved into Coors Field. And there's an entire like 10-minute feature of the Rockies director of communications giving Larry Walker a tour of Coors Field. And I remember thinking that was just the coolest thing ever, because he was making like these cheesy jokes about it. Like, there's a heater under the grass and his locker's so big he's going to put a toilet in it and live inside. It just seemed like he was such a lovable dude. It seemed like he was the type of guy, especially in that era, that fans really wanted to gravitate towards somebody great on that team, because the team wasn't going to be that good, even though they went to the playoffs his first year here. But he really provided that. He was kind of one of the first guys you thought, now this team belongs because they have a bona fide superstar.
I think all of that is right. And it wasn't fake. You know, some people are like,
right,
they develop an image on social media or whatever. Maybe that's them. Maybe it's not. But this is a real deal, man. He just there's no pretense about him at all. And it was great, you know. And the Blake Street Bombers phenomenon was pretty interesting. And I don't know the personality of Alex Burks and Bichette and those guys all that well. But Walker certainly was lovable. And you know, the numbers were there and the personality was there.
Jonah, let me ask you this. We heard another story. Well, and the book, by the way, Up, Up, and Away, if you haven't read it yet, you got to go out and get it. It's out on paperback now. It's absolutely fantastic.
You can get it. You can get it a bunch of places locally, or Amazon or whatever if you want to. Kindle, all those places.
And it's get it, because it's an unbelievable baseball book. And it's just a good, like Jonah said, it's a good people book. It's like a good stories book. And there's so much stuff in it. I mean, from how the logo was conceived and drawn up. And, you know, obviously the Expos didn't open an Olympic Stadium, so to get the first playing in basically a public park is a fascinating story. Right. One of the things that I loved reading about was how the Expos were not bound by the American embargo on Cuba, so they started trying to find players in Cuba where American players couldn't. Fascinating. But now
conversations with Fidel Castro.
Right.
Expeditions in which Castro was consulted, and
they nearly
took all the Puigs back to Montreal with them. It's not really been reported all that much.
But Jonah, let me ask you this, because even just today, Rob Manfred went and visited with the Tampa Bay Rays at Charlotte Sports Park, their home for spring training, and talked about how they need a ballpark. They've got to get a ballpark figured out. It's their biggest issue, whatever. Coming up tomorrow, St. Petersburg Mayor Rick Kreisman is going to pitch another proposal to the city council that would allow the Rays to explore stadium sites across Tampa Bay. The original proposal for that was voted down in December. The reason I bring this up is, you know what's coming. Everybody talks about Montreal getting Major League Baseball back. We saw the exhibition games, what a massive success they were when the Blue Jays played there. Does it, for you, does it carry any excitement, or is it now somewhat like LA and the NFL, where it's kind of, well, it's going to be dangled out there, but it's probably not going to happen. It's leverage, whatever. How do you view that when this comes up every so often, that maybe one day Major League Baseball is going to be back there?
I have a lot of opinions about this, and it's not the opinions that you think they're going to be. Maybe you know the opinions, but for people who are vaguely aware of me, they might be surprised. So first of all, which team finished last in the American League last year in attendance, 2014?
That's a good question, actually. I do not know the answer to that.
I think it would be the Tampa Bay Rays, right?
I think so. Yeah.
The answer is the Cleveland Indians.
Wow.
The Cleveland Indians had a very good team last year that almost made the playoffs. Their ballpark was considered the crown jewel of baseball in the 90s. Everybody wanted to be there. They were
right.
50,000 people. Everybody, Bell and Alomar and whatever.
Yeah. Kenny
last
Walker.
In attendance. Attendance is a weird and fickle thing, my friends. And yes, Tropicana Field is not a wonderful place, but the Rays by no means are the only franchise that struggles to draw fans, including teams that have lovely ballparks. So
and good teams. And you know, the Indians have had that problem for a long, long time. They went through that poor period at the beginning of the 2000s, got good again, sold off all their big assets in Sabathia and Lee, and they've had a lot of problems drawing fans back in the ballpark because the fans don't trust the new management for whatever reason.
Even though they won 177 games the last 2 years, to 95.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think that's too facile an explanation. Obviously, a ballpark would be nice, but I'm completely against taxpayers paying for this stuff. If you're a billionaire, go buy or build your own damn ballpark. I have no interest. If you live in Littleton or Broomfield or Denver, probably, like, there's no reason that you should have to pay for a new. And by the way, Coors Field, hope it never gets replaced. But you know what I mean.
Like, it's, definitely not.
There's just no reason for that. And also, the game has changed fundamentally. This is not an attendance game anymore. It's a television game. And so, if the Rays have revenue problems, okay, attendance is part of it. But the biggest reason is they have a crappy TV deal. Now they can renegotiate their TV deal coming up in a couple years, and they're going to make a lot more money because although people don't go to Rays games, the Rays consistently do very well with their ratings. In fact, 2 or 3 years ago, they drew more people watching their games than the LA Dodgers did. The LA Dodgers play in Los Angeles, which seems insane and impossible, but it's totally true. So we're putting too much emphasis on this stuff, number one. And number two, here's the thing. There's always going to be a weak sister in any sport. There's always going to be a number 30 franchise. Not everybody can be the Yankees. Somebody's got to be number 18. Somebody's got to be number 25. Somebody's got to be number 30. That does not mean that number 30, by definition, is cancerous and we need to cut out the growth and move them to Sheboygan. That is not how life works. It's just going to be that way. There has only been one team in baseball that has moved in the last 40 plus years. And you know which team it is. We're talking about them right now. It's about Trail Expo. If the Rays are number 30 in attendance or revenue or whatever, the Expos were number 7,030. By the end of it, it was so dire and so poisonous, and not really the fault of the fans. It had to do with crummy ownership and too long an conversation to get into, but it was so, so bad. And so I reject the notion, oh, look, the Rays only drew 19,000 people a game. I guess you better move them. That is ridiculous. Furthermore, I would never, ever, ever, ever wish for a city to lose their team. I think that's terrible. I lost my team. It's heartbreaking. I hate it. I'm 40 years old. I still don't like it. Why on earth would this person from, you know, Tampa or St. Pete or Brandon or Orlando or any of those communities who really likes the Rays, why do you want those people to lose their team? That's crummy. I don't want that. I want expansion. Expansion would be great. You add two teams. First of all, you do away with this garbage interleague where the Rockies are randomly playing the Astros on Wednesday night in July. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to that game. Get rid of all that garbage. I want no interleague at all. Or maybe at the outside, the Yankees can play the Mets, but that's it. 16 teams per league, 4 teams per division, same as the NFL. You could literally just put the division winners in the playoffs. I have 8 teams, and I'm fine with that. Or 8 teams plus 2 wild cards or whatever you want, but it becomes much fairer. You don't have to worry about, oh, this year the Rockies played the Angels a bunch of times, but the Dodgers played the Astros or the Rangers. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a great point.
It's scheduling becomes more even. Everything works a lot better. It's fair. It makes more sense. You are rewarding new markets instead of penalizing current markets. That is what I want to see happen in baseball. Not interested in the Rays moving or the A's or anybody else. Get me 2 new franchises. Sure, put one in Montreal. Do whatever you want with the other one.
All right, Jonah, you've been amazing so far. We won't keep you any longer. This has been absolutely wonderful. Well, we'll end on this one. Realistic expectations for the Rockies this year. What do you think?
A lot of it is health. So, I mean, it really does get difficult and complicated because the delta with his team is so big. I feel like it was almost the worst case scenario last year with injuries, and in fact, yeah. they had the second worst record in baseball. If they have kind of a median result that some guys get hurt, and, you know, of course pitchers are going to get hurt, that's, you know, inevitable, but Tulo plays like 129 games and Cargo's pretty healthy and this happens and that happens, the median projection for the Rockies would put them in like the mid-70s. I think that's about right. Maybe with a little upside. However, if a lot of things go right and Butler and Gray pitch and they pitch well, and maybe Winkler and some other guys come up, they can be pretty good. They can get up, you know, significantly into the 80s and start to become an interesting team that we're still talking about past the trade deadline and having discussions about. I think that that talent exists. I'm not pandering. It's not because I'm on a Rockies podcast. There are really good players on this team, especially on the position side. So we'll see. And we'll see what Breidich does too. You know, one of the other – I did the two main stories that I did as standalone team previews in the spring were the Rockies. I also went to White Sox camp. Those were back-to-back days. And I talked to Rick Hahn at length, their general manager. And it was interesting that it struck me as maybe a Hahn and Breidich kind of similar comparison, because Hahn, when he took the job – Kenny Williams basically got booted upstairs, so he stayed. But when Hahn took the job, he didn't do anything at first. He just said, let's go in with the same cast as last year. Granted, they won like 80-odd games the year before, so they weren't bad, but let's try it. They sucked rocks, and by June of that year, they were trying to sell everybody. They got rid of Jake Peavy and Alex Rios, and you know, all the veterans were gone. And Breidich came into the job. What did Breidich do this offseason? Big, fat nothing. Did nothing.
Right. Daniel Descalzo.
He joked about it. You know, he's been quoted where people are ripping him, and he makes light of it. He knows full well what's going on. First of all, I think that the players that are the most, you know, you would think would be trade bait are Tulo and Cargo, and that's a terrible time to trade Tulo and Cargo. You yes. don't do it after a season like that. Tulo hits 50 home runs. That's exactly when nobody wants you to trade him. That's exactly when you should trade him, because then you're going to get a trillion good young players and you could rebuild in an instant. Same with Cargo. So that's number one. And number two, I think that he truly does want to evaluate the Major League franchise, that even though he knows the minor leaguers and knows the system, he's new to the job, and like Hahn, he's got to figure it out. But I guarantee you, it could be at the trade deadline or it could be next offseason, Breidich will be more aggressive. He did not come here to sit on his hands. He doesn't strike me as somebody who's a pushover or whatever. I think that he really gets it and really wants to make the team better. And I think we're going to start to see this happen. So, again, whether it happens now or later, whatever, these things will happen. And if the Rockies, to their discredit, I guess if they have another bad season, then it'll get accelerated. And we could see, as of the deadline, things start to get more exciting. I'm not saying Tulo is going to get traded for seven prospects on July 31st, but I think there will be more movement towards shaking things up if they have another down year.
It's going to be an interesting season, at least in terms of if they do anything to change the look, because right now everybody's freaked out about the way they are. But I think really, like you said, they seem to be okay with where they are at this position, because they have guys who are talented. And if people can stay healthy, maybe you sort of see what you actually have on this roster. Jonah Carey from Grantland.com. Follow him on Twitter at Jonah Carey. Get your copy of Up, Up, and Away. It's available around town. It's available on Amazon, anywhere else you want to get it. Fantastic stuff. And Jonah, this was awesome. Man, thanks a ton for being with us on what is obviously going to be probably the last episode of the podcast. We'll both blow out our UCLs by the end of the show.
RIP, fellas. RIP.
Thanks, Jonah. We'll talk to you
Thank
soon.
You.
Cheers, guys.
You can follow our good pal Jonah Carey on Twitter at Jonah Carey. That's JonahKerei, and that was awesome.
Oh, he was the best.
He's like one of the smartest people. If you're in a room with Jonah Carey,
you're not the smartest man
in
that
room. He's the smartest man in the room. Yeah. Like, he is awesome. And so go follow him on Twitter. Go read his stuff at Grantland.com. Has a lot in that Rocky season preview about injuries and about how basically unlucky the Rockies were last year. They weren't the Texas Rangers, but man, they really suffered. And there's a lot of really good stuff in it. And of course, one of the guys who suffered most last year was Troy Tulowitzki, who missed a sizable portion of the season after getting off to a National League MVP-like start. And Tulo sat down with Anthony's Network, the good folks at Fox Sports 1 this week, and had some kind of interesting things to say.
Yeah, he was leading the league in pretty much almost everything when he got hurt last year. But the quote that I took away, a lot of it was, it's more of a, not necessarily a fluff piece, but it was, hey, how you feeling? Hey, you know, what do you see in this team this year? Kind of the normal stuff you would see in any spring training interview. But Colleen Dominguez, who was running the interview, asked him, if he can see himself in another uniform at the end of the year. And the quote that he had, I can see me staying here my entire career and getting back to winning. I can also see me in a different uniform if things don't get right in that locker room. Now,
yeah,
the whole quote, I get it. You see the first part, yeah, of course, you can see he wants to be a winner in Denver. Altuve knows how to do, and all he knows how much he wants to do is win. He only knows one thing, and that's winning. Now, he hasn't had a lot of that recently, so he will do whatever it takes to win. That is his mentality. That is his psyche. That is the kind of person that he is. So, of course, he wants to be a winner in Denver. They were the one who gave him his big contract. He had a lot of success early in his career here. He wants to see the Rockies be a winning team. I get it from the other standpoint as well. If he can't win in Denver, if the organization is not committed to winning, then he wants to be traded to a team that is. And I understand that as well. But the one thing that I don't get is that last line there. If things don't get right in that locker room. Now, this could have been last year. It would have been more like, okay, the two GM system, Guy Vetts got an office right next to Walt Weiss's. That's a little weird. You don't know who's pulling the strings from where. That's been cleaned up from what we hear. Now, I don't know. I'm not going to say this is a knock on his teammates or if he's trying to throw his teammates under the bus in this vantage point from the way he's trying to phrase this. But if things don't get right in that locker room, it's a very odd way to phrase it because from all accounts that we've had with the locker room, you don't see a lot of malcontents in there. Even when they've sucked the last couple of years, Tyler, I mean, you've been in the locker room on some of those days. There aren't a lot of guys who sulk around, who are all about me, who are not team guys. Am I wrong when I say that?
No, I think you're right. And it is a very curious way to phrase that because it suggests that there's something going on that's maybe not in the on the radar screen of either the media around here or in the public eye. It's entirely possible that what Tulo meant was if we don't start winning, I could right. see myself. Now, maybe that's his definition of being right.
If it was just a poor turn of phrase.
Right, exactly. Maybe that's just his definition of being right in the clubhouse. But it certainly is phrased in a way that makes you kind of go, huh, I wonder what that means. And that seems a little concerning. But you're right. I mean, there aren't any guys that you really look at on this team and think they're all out for themselves first. I mean, the two guys that everybody complains about from the fan base and from the media are Carlos Gonzalez and Troy Tulowitzki. You know, yeah. I mean, nobody's out there complaining about DJ LeMahieu. So yeah. You kind of wonder what was
maybe we should
that.
Start. You know, maybe we should start complaining.
Come on, DJ. What are you going to do while you're always hitting for singles? I love DJ. He's like a guy who kills DJ's you with a million awesome. Little paper cuts.
Yeah.
Love him. Love him. Yeah. Love me some DJ. But it is very strangely phrased.
Yeah. And it was a direct quote. He said it in a very calm way. He knew exactly what he was saying when he said it. So that one was odd. That was odd to me. I'm not sure because by all accounts, he gets along with Cargo. I mean,
yeah, they're
not best friends, but I think that they get along. I'm really not sure what he was getting at there. It's a very, very interesting quote.
It will be. He also said at the beginning of that interview, you know, I know that people don't want to hear me say that I feel good. People want to see me out there for a full season.
True.
Yeah. That's the only way this is going to go away is that people want to see that. They want to see the production for a full year. They want to see a healthy Tulo in big spots in a season that means something. That's the only way that it's going to turn around.
And to Tulo's credit in 25 at-bats this spring, 375 average, 3 homers, 1192 OPS.
He's so pretty good.
And when we saw him last week, he looks healthy. He looks like he's ready to roll.
Which is almost, I don't want to say it this way in a jinxing sort of way, but it's almost surprising because that injury is really tough to come back from quickly, and he has come back and looks very, very good very early in spring.
Yeah, I'd imagine they'll have him on a strict schedule when the season starts because, you know, his opening day was in question as late as a month ago, even a couple of weeks ago, and then he started getting into games, and he's not playing every day yet, so that's why I say if he plays maybe 5 games next week, then maybe he'll be ready to go. But, yeah, I still think he's going to be tempered a little bit to begin the season.
Troy Tulowitzki, 10 games, 375 average, 1192 OPS, as Anthony said. Carlos Gonzalez, 10 games, 360 average, 887 OPS. Who's this one? 20 games, a 342 average, and an 892 OPS. What is that? Oh, it's hashtag Free Kyle Parker. Amazing.
Yeah. How does that work?
Also, Nolan Arenado's hitting .333 in 15 games so far this spring. The guys who you want to see doing well are doing very well.
Yeah, obviously, spring training stats can be taken with a lot of grains of salt. That is not what we're saying, that these guys are going to have these numbers translate when they get to Denver. That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying that it's very good to see these guys playing up to their abilities so early in the spring. Well, not early anymore, but in spring training, I guess, as we near opening day.
Also, my boy Joey Wong of the Australian Baseball League's Perth Heat has played in 13 big league games and is batting .308, which is fantastic.
Trevor Story, .321.
Trevor Story's having a really good spring. Yeah. There are some guys who were Tommy Murphy, even in the – he's only seen some limited action, six games, but he's batting .286 through his six games, whopping seven at-bats. So it's good to see some guys getting some work in. Raimel Tapia, obviously, has been in a few games. He's only been in three games, but he does have his first big league spring training hit. So he's 1-for-4. But the guys who, you know, like you said, guys you want to see them healthy, you want to see them producing, they're doing it so far.
Yes.
And that's encouraging. Let's shift gears and talk about another guy who the Rockies hope to see producing in big spots in the near future, and that's left-hander Tyler Anderson. He's MLB.com's number 17 prospect in the organization, Baseball America's number 16 ranked prospect in the organization, but he's not fully 100% yet coming into the 2015 season. 2 years ago, Tyler Anderson suffered a stress fracture in his left elbow and battled through that injury in 2013, came back and had a fantastic 2014. Last year, he was the Texas League Pitcher of the Year. Health, obviously, is a big, big concern with him, but last year led the Texas League with a 1.98 ERA. Opponents batted .216 against him. He had a whip of just 1.11. He was fantastic.
He was good.
September 10th, the playoff start, left after three innings, and the doctors found that the stress fracture in his left elbow was suffering some effects from that it had returned. So I ran into Tyler in the Rockies offices at Salt River Field's A Talking Stick last week, and I asked him first, how are you feeling? He said, I'm great. My arm's never felt better. We're just being really cautious with this right now. And the second question I asked him was, how do you rehab an injury like a stress fracture in your elbow? What does it take?
Protocol for something like this is just rest. It's one of those things where the body will heal it on its own. You just got to rest and let it work. This year, we just want to be really careful so it didn't come back. And we saw, you know, Gavin Floyd just kind of came back and rushed and re-injured himself. We just want to make sure we don't avoid that.
You had such a good year last year. Right now, do you just kind of take this as, like, you get to rest a little bit longer, make sure you're 100% for this year? Are you frustrated at all by it?
I think, you know, you're frustrated with yourself, like, because you don't understand, you just wish you could be healthy. But it's one of those things that I really enjoy, the game of baseball. And we have so many good teammates here and support staff that the Rockies have done a really good job of keeping me busy, keeping me entertained. And, you know, just because you can't physically do something doesn't mean you can't get better in other areas of your game. And the Rockies have done a really good job of helping me with that so far.
The season that you had last year was fantastic. And to be able to put together a full, you know, 140, go through that entire grind, the entire slog of a season, how good did that feel to make it and be consistently good start to start, week to week, month to month?
It was great. It would have been really good if, you know, if the end of it would have finished the same way. But it's just one of those things that consistency is the biggest thing in this game. And so if you can try to be consistent, and that's kind of the goal you shoot for every day, you don't always have to be great and you don't have to be, you just kind of want to avoid being really bad and just be consistent all the time. But it was just, it's fun. You know, whenever you're around a good group of guys too, they all kind of feel the same way. It makes it a lot of fun.
The system right now is so stacked with you guys pitching prospect-wise with John and Eddie and now Kyle. And what's it like to be part of a system that has that energy, especially in your position group? I mean, just for all of that pitching talent to be around, what's that been like?
It's awesome. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. You're around a bunch of young guys you can always learn something from. You know, that there's guys, some guys go out and you can see how their mentality, because they throw 100 miles an hour, might be a little different than yours, and you can always learn from that. Or you can learn from, you might not do things the same way, but you can learn, you can pick up things here and there. And everyone's competitive. They push each other and everyone wants to be the best. That makes it fun.
What's the best thing about being here? I mean, this complex is unbelievable and it feels like it adds kind of a different energy. And not to mention, you know, you got Jeff now running the show, who's familiar with all you guys, who knows everybody in and out. I mean, what's the energy been like this season now getting into, you know, what should be a pretty fun campaign with all you guys really climbing quick?
It's different around here for sure. Brightest and Wilson, you know, running the major league and minor league side, are two really, really bright guys, and they're both pretty high energy. But at the same time, they know how to keep it loose. So there's not I think there's a very fine line, and they do a really good job of keeping us right along there where you can still have fun and making it fun for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that makes, you know, if you can come to the field every day and have fun, that's awesome. And at the same time, they know how to push guys and make sure that everyone's driving, you know, and working for one goal, which is to win. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the mentality around here. That's what everyone's kind of feeling.
Let me get you out of here on this. Being an Oregon guy, with that program developing so much the way that it was when you were there and now continuing to grow, the ballpark's awesome, the uniforms obviously are sweet. How cool is that to watch that program continue to grow into one of the premier programs in the country in a conference that already has so many of them, but to watch it keep growing? What's that like for you as an alum?
It's a really proud moment. When we got there my freshman year, that was our first year, and all the guys that came up together, there were some hardships. You know, we were 14-42 our freshman year, and so we kind of learned from there. And Coach Horton and the staff, he always surrounds himself with a great staff, and he's an unbelievable guy, not only as a coach but a human being, and he helps everyone kind of get better. I think that's where the real pride's at, is that you know that whether they're winning or losing, that you're going to create good people there. And to see them win is even better.
Getting ready to get started here. When's the next time you think you're going to be throwing and really letting it loose?
Hopefully really soon. I should start playing catcher really soon, and from then on it's hopefully – no setbacks. It's all downhill, and you know that's the fun part.
Very cool, man. Actually, one more. I lied to you. Last thing. Pitch clocks this year. What's your take? Everybody I've talked to kind of seems like it's, if you're taking 20 seconds between pitches anyway, probably something's not going right. You think it's going to have any effect, or what do you? How have you viewed it since they announced it?
I think it's a very, very minor detail. I think that Major League Baseball was asked to try to speed up the time of the game because they were getting long, and that was a way that they could show the fans that they were doing that. And I don't think, as a pitcher, that it's going to make that big of a difference. Usually you try to press tempo anyways, and you want to, you know, the quicker you can go, it's good for your, you know, defense wants to play. If you're on the hill ready to go, your defense is ready to go. So I know as an organization we preach that. I'm sure other teams do as well. And I think the only time you're really going to see that is, you know, if guys come out of the pen. I think what's going to happen is it's going to limit guys that, you know, the guys that walk all the way from the bullpen in the outfield. You know, guys are just going to have to jog a little quicker, but really I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
Tyler, thanks. Good luck this year, man. Get healthy.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Rockies left-hander Tyler Anderson. It was really good to talk to him, and
he seemed
very much in good spirits. I mean, he was really, when I asked him, how are you feeling, he said, great. And it wasn't like I feel great media guy. It was like a genuine, no, really, my arm feels great. We're really just being cautious with this. And he did reference Gavin Floyd. Gavin Floyd had a similar injury, didn't necessarily rush back, but came back a little bit too soon, it seems like, and has suffered not a relapse, but sort of a re-injury, I guess, of what plagued him last year. He underwent elbow surgery already.
Yeah, he's pretty much done for the year, I believe.
Right. And the Rockies want to avoid anything even resembling that. And so that is the reason for the caution with Tyler Anderson. Now, before we get into our next interview, I just want to throw this out there for a second. The AAA Colorado Springs rotation could be, on opening day, John Gray, Eddie Butler, if he's healthy, Tyler Anderson. If not, he'll be there at some point this season. And then any combination of guys like Chad Bettis or Christian Bergman, or that rotation is going to be filthy.
Yes.
They're going to be very good at baseball. They're good at baseball.
I imagine Eddie Butler is going to be starting in Denver, if I had to make a...
So is that what you're going to go with? Because that's not many people have even... The talk is all been about, John Gray's got to be there for a home opener or whatever nonsense.
I mean...
But Eddie Butler is...
Eddie Butler's he's already on the 40-man.
Exactly. He's on the 40-man. He's already started his service clock. Why isn't he your guy?
He's pitched very well this spring.
Exactly.
He pitched,
he's been through, fantastic.
Five good innings against the Giants yesterday. He's at a 2.63 ERA in 13 2/3 so far this spring. 8 strikeouts, just 3 walks. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to go forward with him. And as Jonah Carey said, it might be just a war of attrition among all the pitchers coming up from Scottsdale. He may be one of the only healthy arms they have, and they may be forced to bring him up, which is not the worst thing in the world at all. Because if you can say that John Gray is the best pitcher the Rockies have and may not be on the opening day roster, Eddie Butler is by far one of the top 5 starting pitchers they have on that roster ready to go at the big league level.
Easily.
So, yeah, I think Eddie Butler should definitely have a spot in the rotation coming out of spring training. Absolutely, 100%. I think he should be probably the – God, he can be the 3rd starter considering what they're going to be doing. Good God. Probably slating as the 4th starter behind, as it stands, Kendrick, Matzik, and Jordan Lyles.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're starting early.
I mean, yeah, it's
early this year.
if I could guess what it's going to be coming out of spring training, it'll be Kendrick, Matzik, Lyles, Butler, Bergman.
Wow.
Yeah. Inspiring confidence in the troops.
Remember a week ago when you thought, all right.
Well, yeah, Jolie Chassin or Jolie De La Rosa.
All right. They'll figure in somebody for that fifth spot.
Things have gone off the rails.
Yep. That's going well. By the way, just want to step outside the box for a moment and just read a context totally or a tweet totally out of context for no reason whatsoever. Our good pal Cameron Goldner tweeted 11 minutes ago, quote, totally just bash my head into a door. Moving on.
Anyway.
Rockies manager of player development, Chris Forbes. As soon as I got done interviewing Tyler Anderson, I walked up the stairs, was headed out to go catch the afternoon game. It was Sunday afternoon at Salt River Fields at Talking Stick. Sat in the berm for a little while. Delightful day. And Chris Forbes was waiting at the top of the staircase, and he said, how was he? And I said, he was great. And he said, he is a really good kid. And I said, it really seems like it. Do you want to talk on my recorder for an interview for the podcast? And he said yes. So I talked to Chris Forbes a little bit about Tyler Anderson and kind of where he is in his rehab, what it'll take for him to be back to 100%. And then we talked a little bit more about where things go from here from a player development side. But we started off talking about Tyler Anderson and what the next step is for him.
I think patience, no question. You know, he's very focused. He's very driven. He's extremely motivated to help the big league club. So you just need to be patient. You know, some of these things take time. And, you know, I think it's a true testament to him now as he's kind of, you know, maturing within our organization. And he recognizes that, you know, there's bigger plans for him.
When you have a guy like that who is now, I don't want to say the forgotten guy, but he is among a group of guys. I mean, Tyler Matzik obviously graduated. He's already making an impact. John and Eddie and Kyle Freeland. And what does that do for all of them to have this big group of prospects that can all kind of push each other, can all kind of show guys what they do well, or maybe kind of dangle that carrot out for somebody to try to one-up, I guess, from night to night? To have a whole group like that together, how much does that push these guys to be better? How much do they push each other?
I think they push each other extremely well. You know, they're all competitive in nature. You know, they all, and you know, within that, they're team focused. Mm-hmm. And you know, the goals of recognizing that we're trying to win every night, and each guy's going to have to, you know, really toe the line. Mm-hmm. You know, especially that group that you mentioned, you know, that's got a chance to be a pretty special group.
For people who are maybe somewhat unfamiliar with the minor league side of things, who are some of the guys who have really impressed you guys so far in camp? I know Joey Wong has been fantastic in the major league games that he's been in, but who are some of those guys that are really standing out as having good camps, good spring so far?
You know, I mean, you definitely always look at the core of guys, and, you know, right now it's very early on because of the games. You know, there are some guys that are swinging the bats pretty well, defensively playing pretty well. There's a couple guys in last year's draft that I really liked. It's hard to talk about Castellani because I drafted him when I was scouting. But, you know, he threw really well. Sam Howard, to me, has looked great. Some of the younger guys. You know, for me, it's harder for me because I'm focusing on now.
Right.
And on this side, you're trying to get the, okay, that's him. Seeing guys like, you know, him and Jan and Sensatella and those guys really for the first time, you know, getting a feel for Troy Stein, guys like that that are, you know, we got out of A&M, you know, so there's a huge group of guys that I feel like are having good camps, you know, which is, you know, important. And some guys are getting challenged, you know, they kind of know they're starting to step into that gray area and level where we've got to get you to graduate or else, you know, so it's great to see. It does put a lot of pressure on each player, you know. But great to see.
Tell me about what your duties were last year and what your responsibilities have been to shift this year, because I know it's kind of two different, you know, you're on two sides of the same coin. But take me through kind of what you were last year and now what you're doing this year.
I was the area scout down here for the past 6 years, you know, and I've been with the Rockies since, I guess, December of 06 in scouting. Shifting over to this side is now – you know, as you've seen the rawer form of the player on the scouting side, and what can we create, and you're really digging on makeup, we're big into makeup. The same thing over here, you know, but, and now we're seeing what we can create. You know, at the end of the day, we're trying to, you know, ultimately make the best version of each player. some guys you recognize have this tools and a big league talent, and some guys, even if they're going to be an org guy for us, we want to be the best org guy they can possibly be. When they leave here, you know, they have a sense of accomplishment of, you know, yeah, it's over, but, you know, I did what I could. You know, so I'm not a big fan of trying to create something, you know, on certain players, and you know, hopefully that'll be the tone of the camp, the rest of the camp, and it's been the tone is, you know, just trying to make each player the best version of themselves.
Two more questions for you. One, as it pertains to the minor league guys, especially this year, pitch clocks are coming in. What are your thoughts on that whole idea? It seems like from everybody I've talked to, they kind of feel like, you know, even when we were talking with Zach the other day, it doesn't seem like it's going to be that much of an issue, because if you're taking 20 seconds or more, you're probably taking too long anyway. But have you guys talked with them much about that, or what are your thoughts on
it? You know, we had talked about it previously, before we even got to this point, that, hey, you know, we want tempo, we want, you know, and I think it helps the pitchers, you know, if they're having to wait for the sign and they're, you know, that breaks their tempo, and it's just not something they can ever get into the rhythm. So I think it's welcomed. You know, I know it's been fought at a lot of levels, but it is what it is. It's in place, you know. So we haven't heard any negative feedback on it. Our pitching coaches like it, because they do like guys tempo. Right. You know.
Last thing, this part of the spring now, you're really getting into it with, you know, 2 weeks ago or whatever it is until these full season guys leave. What are the things that you guys are really evaluating at this stage in the spring? Is it kind of guys making those last adjustments, the adjusting to what they've seen so far in camp and getting ready? Or what is it right now that you're into this meat of the schedule in the first few days of minor league games?
I think, you know, guys that are making the adjustments to the level that we hope they're going to be at. Because, you know, that's still, you know, there's not a lot of clarity. You're still trying to figure out some spots here and there, and challenge the right guys, not push a guy too hard, you know, and ultimately staying healthy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the one thing, you just kind of, you know, we're not knocking the rust off, because they come here so early now. And when they get the games, you know, hopefully we're doing the fundamental stuff that we're preaching right, and we're paying attention to detail, and you know, we're not getting hurt.
Chris, thanks. It's a lot of really good energy in here, and it seems like it's going to be a fun year. Good luck.
It has been a lot of fun so far.
Big thanks to Chris Forbes, the Rockies manager of player development. He was awesome. I ran into him a few times last week when I was there, and he was fantastic the entire time. And I did not know his entire story. Chris Forbes is a fascinating guy.
It's a doozy of a story.
It's pretty unbelievable. Tracy Ringlesby had a really, really great story about him. This is from 2012, the end of 2012. But basically, here's the synopsis. New Year's Eve 1999, Chris Forbes was told by doctors that they had found two inoperable brain tumors, and he was given 3 to 6 months to live. That was New Year's Eve 99. 3 months after that, in March of 2000, I'll read from the story. Quote, after receiving his regular cancer treatment, Forbes was waiting at a stoplight a few blocks from the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City when a carjacker opened the door of Forbes' vehicle and stuck a gun in his side. Forbes pressed on the accelerator and pulled away, but not before the gunman pulled the trigger and the bullet pierced Forbes' stomach, missing the stomach lining by an eighth of an inch.
Jesus.
So he has cancer, he's going through his treatment, and then he gets shot. And you know what? After that, he basically said, F cancer, I'm going to beat cancer, and he did. And it's been 15 years since, and he's an amazing guy. Go read the story. Tracy Ringlesby had it a couple years ago on MILB, or on MLB.com, actually at the end of 2012. It is an amazing story. And if you happen to see Chris Forbes at some point at Coors Field throughout the season, go shake his hand, because he's an awesome guy and really had some pretty interesting insight. He was the Phoenix area scout, as he noted in that interview, and now he's moved over to the player development side. So he knows what it's like to watch a lot of guys as amateurs, and now he's kind of learning more of what he wants to look for in their development as professionals, and that's really fascinating. And now we're getting into the part of the spring where we pretty much know where guys are going to be going. We know that, you know, guys who've been reassigned to minor league camp, we know the position groups that some of these guys are working with, what rosters they're working with. As it works for the minor league teams, you basically have a group that's a roster set up as it would be presumably on opening day for all of the minor league affiliates. So you'll have guys working with the Isotopes group, and guys are working with the Rock Cats group, and guys are working with the Nuts group, and guys are working with the Tourist group, or whatever it is, and they sort of know where they're going. So we kind of have a plan of that now, and an idea of where these guys will be going into 2015.
Sounded like you said the Rockettes group.
The Rockettes.
You know, Rockettes group.
This is not a joke. My grandma was a Rockette.
That's probably a joke.
It's not a joke. I swear.
That's probably a joke.
It's the truth. It's a real thing. It's a thing
what if the Rockies just, with the Rockettes, trade places with the Rockettes for like one day. It was like a job switch, a vocational switch, like a Freaky Friday situation.
The Lindsay Lohan edition?
Yeah, duh.
Do you say Lohan or Lohan?
It's Lohan.
Yeah, exactly. Because
I'm a Lohan man.
Who are the
That's what I was
to
say when Lohan. I was a Lohan man. Not anymore. That's terrifying and now, but...
Also, I just want to point out...
I'm not a Lohanman.
A Lohanman.
It's like, just, it's like Phil Spider-Man.
I just want to point out, we're like an hour and 15 minutes into the podcast, and we have yet to even mention the Yard Goats are coming!
Oh my god, the Yard Goats.
Woo! We called that, right?
I want a Yard Goat hat so badly, and I hope...
They're coming out in June.
I hope it's just a goat. I know a yard goat is not a goat. I get it.
It has to be a goat. The logo has to be a goat.
They have to have like nine mascots. They can have a locomotive on the hat. Fine. They can have an alternate hat with a goat on it. That's fine. A goat just like chewing on cud in a yard. That's what I want on my hat. If you're listening, New Britain, that is what I want on my hat. Harvard, Hartford, whatever you're going to be. I want a goat chewing cud on my hat.
Chewing cud. I think that's going to be the title of this episode. Chewing cud with Jonah Carey. Done. Nailed it. Okay, now when you envision, and maybe this is just me, but when you envision what this is going to look like, what do you envision their colors to be?
Oh.
I think they're going to go like Akron Rubber Ducks, blue and yellow.
It's kind of like synesthesia, where you can like see music. I'm trying to see like the colors of what I believe a fake baseball team would be.
You have to do a lot of drugs for that. They're not
California. I don't know. I'm thinking like gray, like gunmetal with like streaks of like dark blue.
I thought you were... That's my favorite song ever written, by the way. Dark Blue by Jax Mannequin.
Gunmetal by Poison.
Gunmetal. I thought you were going to go with a very specific shade of a different color since you went with gunmetal. I'd say gunmetal and like a little mix of chartreuse. Oh, okay. For sure.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking they're going to go like blue and yellow. But they're in the same league as Akron, so that wouldn't make any sense.
No, it wouldn't.
I don't know. Just really excited for the Yard Goats. In case you have no idea what we're talking about, the New Britain Rockettes, the new AA affiliate of the Colorado Rockies.
Does anybody have any idea what we're talking about ever? Honestly.
They're moving to Hartford next year and into a brand new ballpark, and they're going to rebrand themselves as the Hartford Yard Goats because that's, what is it? Something with trains? What?
It's a train that it lives in the stockyard. It leaves trains to other tracks when they're coming into the station.
I thought you just made it. You just made it sound like a character from Thomas the Tank Engine. It lives in the stockyards.
Lives in the stockyards. It feeds on rusty oil cans.
Oh my god!
And it talks with a British accent. What? Sorry. What?
Are they even stockyards for trains?
I have no clue.
Aren't stockyards like...
This isn't 1915. I know you asked, though, because I walked home from work today, and you asked, what is this, 1940s? What is this, the 1930s? What is this, the 1920s? And I was like, what about, like, what is this, before I turned 15?
Oh, man. I feel like we need a Costanza this episode and just go out right now. Just go out on top, because I don't think it's going to get any better from here.
Well, we said that with Lou, and then we got Jonah Carey.
That's true.
I don't know, man.
What was the episode? Oh, when we got Jason Parks last year. That was
Yeah, we said it with Jason Parks, too.
I named that in which we hit our apex.
Yeah.
And good title. It's no Chewing Cud with Jonah Carey.
We've hit a lot of apices? Apexes?
Let's Google it. It's got to be apices.
You're right. we are off the rails. But if we had a yard goat, we wouldn't be off the rails because they would lead us in the right direction.
Nailed it. Apices. Apexes or apices.
Hey, look at that. My Kenyan college education finally paying off.
That is good to know. Anthony went to college in Kenya.
Yep, that's exactly what I said.
All right, Anthony Masterson.
All right, Tyler Mon.
Ben Badler for Baseball America joins the show next week.
That would be the apex, I think, from now on. Yeah.
What else? Is there anything else we need to talk about?
Probably. I mean, I think next week we're going to have our big season preview episode.
We are.
So tune in. It's going to be awesome.
Probably should have Jonah Carey on for that, since he actually did preview the season for the Rockies.
Yeah.
But no, we'll do that. You'll go all Anthony and all Tyler.
Yeah, because by that time, we should have a pretty good idea of who's going to be breaking camp with the big club.
Well, depending on who keeps getting hurt.
That too. Yeah.
Next week it'll be like, you know, David Hale. Well, David Hale's already heard bad example. It'll be Jordan Lyles. Jordan Lyles will just pull in Edwin Jackson and he'll get lost in the ball and his GPS will lead him away from the ballpark and he'll never be seen again.
Whoa, Jair Jurgens, a fifth starter coming out of camp.
John Lannon's going to get a look. Okay. Aaron Laffey. Which one do they have? Both.
Both. They have both. They have both pitchers. They have
their
both
lockers pitchers. Were next to each other, I think, in the minor league clubhouse, and I couldn't tell either of them apart.
Well, they look kind of very, very different, but their names are very, very similar.
I couldn't tell them apart by looking at their name tags.
Yeah, well, because you're a bad media person.
By the way, that's the most awkward thing in the world is walking through a team's minor league clubhouse where they're like, it's basically the size of seven clubhouses because there's 109,000 guys there. And you just wander through like looking at the name tags, trying to find the people that you're trying to find.
And like,
do you guys know where Robbie Perkins is?
And especially like John Lannon. John Lannon has started multiple opening games for the Washington Nationals, you know?
So weird.
Yeah, very weird.
Baseball's a weird game, man. CJ Nowakowski had a fantastic thing a couple weeks ago on what it means to sign a minor league deal. And then he had another thing that I actually haven't gotten a chance to read this week, but he had another piece this week about cut day in Major League Camp and how terrifying that is.
And had a lot of guys tweeting him who, like, they're telling their stories of their cut days and how it happened for them. It was just fantastic stuff. And I cannot wait to work with CJ again this year on MLB Whip Around. It's going to be awesome.
He's so awesome. And he follows the PDP on Twitter, which makes me.
Yes, he does. Awesomer. Shout out to CJ. See you in the production meeting.
We're big CJ Nowakowski fans here. Also, now you got to get him on the podcast.
I know. I will. Hopefully.
All right, Anthony.
All right, Tyler. This has been fun.
I think we'll talk to you next week.
Totally.
Leading us out on the show today, as you heard, bringing us in on the show today, Larry Good sent us in some music for episode number 37 of the Purple Dinosaur podcast, the Josh Fogg / Hey, you know what? Why don't we just give it to Josh Fogg? I don't want it to be the Greg Reynolds Memorial Edition.
Yeah, this has been too good to be the Greg Reynolds Memorial Edition.
Josh Fogg Memorial Edition. Intrigue, Larry Good sent us. That's going to lead us out of the show today. It is leading us out of the show today. Big thanks to Larry for sending in some music. Big thanks to Jonah Carey for coming on today. Our thanks to Tyler Anderson and Chris Forbes as well for joining the show from Salt River Fields of Talking Stick. And until next week, when Bed Badler joins us from Baseball America.
Probably not true. Probably not going to happen.
Have a solid week. Goodbye, Anthony.
Goodbye, Tyler.
Bye.
Bye. But no, I've worked like 8 straight days. Like since I left Phoenix, I've had to work every single day.
Yeah, why are you walking home from work?
Because I can when I go in the morning because I can walk and get exercise when I do a swing shift. And it's
What's a swing shift?
Like when I work both America's Pregame and Fox Sports Live, so I'm not just working on one show. I'd go in like in the morning and help out with the early show and then help out with the late show and then get to leave early.
The late show with David Letterman?
Yep.
They filmed that there?
Yeah.
They shoot that at Fox Sports 1?
Yeah. Crazy, right?
Who knew?
You would never know.
What? Yeah. That's nuts. What's going to happen when Stephen Colbert takes over?
They're going to do it from my bedroom.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, but like it's going to be like 90 degrees here tomorrow.
Nice.
And we both have the day off. We're going to the beach, and I need her to not be pissed off the entire day because she's going to be furious if they lose this game.
Can I just move in with you? Can our life be you, me, and Dupree?
What a weird reference.
I know. Who was the last time? I never even saw that movie.
Also, this could be a hidden track.
I was trying to egg it on in the hopes that it would be a hidden track. And now, congratulations, everyone, for making it through the hidden track. All right, let's get back onto this.
All right.